The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
That's our pal Boca Brittany Summers with a takeoff on the old classics four tune. Robert Hill in the chat room saying Steely Dan. No, that wasn't Steely Dan. Classics 4, I believe, was the name of the band that did the original Stormy. Boca Britt, of course, taking advantage of the song to deal with today's news. Thank you, Britt. I don't even know where to begin with the news that came out this morning. So there I am lying in bed watching Morning Joke, and Stormy Daniels' lawyer, Michael Avenatti, was on, and they were just getting ready. They were wrapping up the interview, and Mika Brzezinski pulls one more question out of her hat.
Yeah. Was she threatened in any way?
Yes.
Mm. Was she threatened physical harm?
Yes.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Wow. There's the lawyer. Let me play for you the full exchange, because there's more to it than that. Although the lawyer can't say much, because he's pimping the 60 Minutes interview, which is now scheduled to air a week from Sunday. Anyway, here's more of that, the interview.
It's more than just a consensual relationship here that she wants to tell the country about.
There's the act, mm-hmm. and there's the cover-up.
The act.
Mm-hmm. And the American people are going to learn about both in the interview and beyond.
Okay.
Michael Avenatti, thank you.
That's a deep tease right there.
That is. Yeah. March 25th.
March 25th.
Yeah.
Week from Sunday. I'll know where I'll be that night.
Yeah. Was she threatened in any way?
Yes.
Was she threatened physical harm?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Keep going, Mika.
No, those, I mean, we started the tease and you just...
What do you
mean
by that? Was her life threatened?
I'm not going to answer that. People will have to tune in to 60 Minutes on March 25th.
Okay, now we're back to the deep tease.
So now you're working for Les Moonves.
Oh, no.
Joe Scarborough has nothing to add to the conversation at all.
Well, no, so what can you tell us about the threats, the physical threats?
I can't tell you anything beyond what I've already said. Again, I think...
Can you tell us whether it came from the president directly, the physical threats?
I'm not going to answer that.
Will you deny that the president of the United States threatened your client?
I will not confirm or deny.
Ooh. Will you confirm or deny that in the 60 Minutes interview?
Again, I think it will become apparent to people when they tune into 60 Minutes on March 25 as to the details relating to the threat, and the American people can judge for themselves on who's telling the truth and who's not telling the truth. And again, we're not trying to silence anyone. We want both sides to lay out their version of the facts so the American people can decide for themselves what happened.
Let me ask one more question about the threat. Does the threat emanate from one of the parties to the agreement or someone associated with one of the parties to the agreement?
I'm not at liberty to discuss that.
Okay. Yes, no question. Was the threat verbal?
Well, you can't say yes or no to that, can you?
Again, I'm not at liberty to discuss that.
Did anyone point a gun at her?
I'm not at liberty to discuss that. You can ask it 17 different ways. I'm going to give you the same answer.
Let me ask you.
I applaud your tenaciousness.
You've seen the cartoons where they drop a grand piano on somebody's head from the 30th floor.
What does that have to do with anything?
Stop.
I just you were asking him. He's not going to answer that question.
I'm curious.
But I already asked him if the president of the United States thundered. He said, I'm not going to... confirm that or deny that.
There's one more part in this that I want to get to.
Got to
get through Joe Scarborough's rambling.
He's just hoping for a moment of aphasia where suddenly the truth just tumbles out and oh my God, what did I just say?
Michael, is your client now operating under the assumption that that nondisclosure agreement is invalid because David Dennison didn't sign it? Is that why she's able to talk to 60 Minutes?
I'm not at liberty to disclose why she believes she's able to talk to 60 Minutes. And again, I think when people tune in to 60 Minutes, they're going to learn a lot of the details and the answers to the questions that you've asked.
But is she breaking the nondisclosure agreement by sitting down with 60 Minutes?
I can't opine on that.
He doesn't answer. For someone who doesn't answer a lot of questions, he sure does make the rounds. He then went over to CNN where he again said that Stormy Daniels, a.k.a. Stephanie Clifford, I think is her real name, was physically threatened to shut up. And if you wonder if this is unusual, I direct you to Digby's blog, Digby's Hullabaloo, where she writes that Michael Cohen is known for his lurid threats. And she quoted Cohen, the lawyer, the one who signed that nondisclosure agreement with Stormy Daniels. David Dennison, a.k.a. Donald Trump, notably did not sign it, which is why they're saying the agreement was invalid. Here's a threat that Michael Cohen made to a writer for The Daily Beast, who was writing a story about, you might remember, it was some time ago. I wonder, I think I have it open here. When was this? It was back in the summer of 2015. There was a story about Ivana Trump, not Ivanka, but her mother, Ivana. Nothing weird about that, is there? Just throwing it out there. When Ivana, in her book, said that Donald Trump raped her. Now, this writer, Brandy Zadrozny, was writing about it at the Daily Beast. And here's what Michael Cohen said. I will make sure that you and I meet one day while we're in the courthouse, and I will take you for every penny you still don't have. And I will come after your Daily Beast and everyone else that you possibly know, Cohen said. So I'm warning you, tread very fucking lightly, because what I'm going to do to you is going to be fucking disgusting. You understand me? You write a story that has Mr. Trump's name in it with the word rape, and I'm going to mess your life up for as long as you're on this friggin' planet. You're going to have judgments against you, so much money you'll never know how to get out from underneath it, he added. So this is a guy who is, I would say, comfortable in making threats. Again, that came from Michael Cohen, Trump's attorney. Just saying. You know, this would bring down any other presidency. Think back to Bill Clinton, right? And Monica Lewinsky. That the whole Monica Lewinsky thing came out of the Whitewater investigation. But once they found out that he was stooping a White House intern, the whole thing turned, right? And it was all about Monica Lewinsky and the dress. I just hope there's some kind of blue dress. I hope that Stormy Daniels has something, some kind of evidence. And all accounts make it seem as if she does. The whole thing is just so slimy. And, you know, makes you wonder what else. Now, the attorney on CNN this morning also said that there were six others who have come forward.
As of tonight, we've been approached by six separate women with similar stories to my client. I want to stress that we have not vetted these stories to any great degree. However, the initial consultations, the initial information that we're receiving indicates that there are some striking similarities between their stories and that of my client, Ms. Clifford.
Can you say if any of these women have non-disclosure agreements?
Yes.
They do?
At least two of them
do. Can you say, is it from the same LLC that Michael Cohen set up for the one with Stormy Daniels?
We don't know yet.
How slimy is that? This guy stoops women and then has them sign non-disclosure agreements saying that, you know, here, we're gonna fuck, but you can't tell anybody. Which goes against the grain when you think about Donald Trump, because he's the kind of person who would like to brag about stuff like that. I don't know. It's so unsettling. The whole thing is just so distasteful. Ay, 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 ay. Well, it's Friday. We made it to Friday, and no one else has been fired from the White House yet. In fact, apparently, according to reports, John Kelly and Donald Trump have kissed and made up for the moment anyway. So General Kelly, at least for now, is safe. Trump told him he's safe. As in reality TV show parlance, you're safe, you're in. Cool, I'm not voted off the island tonight. And apparently, Kelly said McMaster is safe for the time being now as well. We'll see. It's still early. It's only 3:12 on a Friday afternoon. Anything can still happen. That's the thing about this White House. Anything can and does happen any hour of the day or night, any day of the week. Ay, ay, ay. It used to be, remember, Friday news dumps? You know, Fridays used to be slow news days. I don't know. Before we get to what's news, there is some other news that has happened since I recorded it this morning. DeAndre Harris, do you remember that name? We had, what's his name? I'm trying to, Zach Roberts, the photographer who went down to Charlottesville, who somehow got video of DeAndre Harris being beaten and pictures and somebody drew a gun on him. Well, DeAndre Harris, although he was beaten pretty badly in Charlottesville by white supremacists, he was actually charged with assault. Today, he was found not guilty. So win one for the good guys there. And a sad note, Louise Slaughter, congresswoman from New York, fell a couple of days ago in her D.C. home and hit her head. She had a head injury. Well, she died today at the age of 88. So that's a bit of sad news. Accolades coming in from both sides of the aisle, which is unusual in this political era. So sad news out of New York and Washington, D.C. Today, as I said, is Friday. Driftglass is going to return. He'll join us for a discussion of all the insanity that's going on. I figured I'd start out by asking him what's keeping him up at night. And we'll see what he comes up with other than the New York Times editorial page. But before we get to Driftglass, let's check in with today's What's News.
I read the news today, oh boy. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Trump administration on Thursday blamed the Russian government for a campaign of cyber attacks stretching back at least 2 years that targeted the U.S. power grid, marking the first time the United States has publicly accused Moscow of hacking into American energy infrastructure. Beginning in March 2016 or possibly earlier, Russian government hackers sought to penetrate multiple U.S. critical infrastructure sectors, including energy, nuclear, commercial facilities, water, aviation, and manufacturing, according to a U.S. security alert published Thursday. Rachel Maddow has more from the New York Times.
In its urgent report in June, the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI notified power plant operators about the attacks, but stopped short of identifying Russia as the culprit. By then, Russian spies had compromised the business networks of several American energy, water, and nuclear plants, mapping out their corporate structures and computer networks. They included that of the Wolf Creek Nuclear Operating Corporation, which runs a nuclear plant near Burlington, Kansas. But in that case, and those of other nuclear operators, Russian hackers hadn't leapt from the company's business networks into nuclear plant controls. Forensic analysis suggested that Russian spies were looking for inroads, although it wasn't clear what their goal was. Well, now apparently they've gotten further in these attacks. According to this report released today by Homeland Security and the FBI, by the spring of 2017, Russian attackers successfully compromised some North American and European energy operators. In the following months, the Russian hackers made their way to machines that have access to critical control systems at power plants. So not just the business side, but the stuff that actually controls the power plants. New computer screenshots released in the report today show that Russian state hackers had the foothold they would have needed to manipulate or shut down U.S. power plants. According to Eric Chin, a security technology director at Symantec, a digital security firm that's reported extensively on this attack, quote, "We now have evidence that they're sitting on the machines connected to industrial control infrastructure that allow them to effectively turn the power off or effect sabotage. From what we can see, they're there. They have the ability to shut the power off. All that's missing is some political motivation."
Times is also reporting that the special counsel Robert Mueller has subpoenaed the Trump Organization to turn over documents, including some related to Russia. The order is the first known time that the special counsel demanded documents directly related to Trump's businesses, bringing the investigation closer to the president.
We learned that in recent weeks, Mueller had sent a subpoena to the organization for documents, including some related to Russia. This obviously moved the investigation closer to the president and, you know, sort of raises questions about what, you know, why was it that Mueller went with the subpoena? Why didn't he simply ask the organization for the documents? And, you know, where is this headed? Does this show that Mueller is simply still focused on Russia, or is he looking at other matters that the president would consider a red line?
Michael, the documents, is it safe to say they are related to the president's businesses?
Well, it is the president's business. So that is what it is. This is not the campaign. The Trump Organization was not supposed to play a role in the campaign. The campaign was supposed to be the campaign. And the Trump Organization was not part of obstruction that we know of. So those are the two big issues that Mueller is looking at. And he had sent this subpoena to the Trump Organization. So the question is that what is it about? We know in 2017, last year, it came up about Trump Tower Moscow, and that about a deal that was being put together for that the president had signed a term sheet about.
More than a month after the congressional deadline, the Trump administration imposed sanctions on a series of Russian organizations and individuals in retaliation for interference in the 2016 presidential elections and other malicious cyber attacks. It was the most significant action taken against Moscow since Trump took office. Actually, the only action taken against Moscow since Trump took office. The sanctions came at the same time the Trump administration joined a collective statement with Britain, France, and Germany on Thursday, denouncing Russia for its apparent role in a nerve gas attack on a former Russian spy and his daughter on British soil, calling it a clear violation of international law. But the statement included no joint action in response. At least six people are dead after a new pedestrian bridge collapsed in Miami at Florida International University on Thursday. The 950-ton structure was built using a method known as accelerated bridge construction, in which most of the bridge was built off-site. It had just been moved into place a few days earlier. Multiple media sources are reporting that Trump has decided to remove H.R. McMaster as his national security advisor and is actively discussing potential replacements. Here's CNN's Dana Bash.
Well, CNN is confirming that the president has made the decision to remove H.R. McMaster. What the holdup is two things. One is who he's going to be replaced with. That's obvious. But two, where H.R. McMaster is going to go next, because he is active duty. He's a three-star. The question has been whether he would be put somewhere, deployed somewhere, in an effort to get a fourth star, or whether he would go somewhere else, or whether he would retire from the military completely. I got
the news. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and The Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener-funded, and I really can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Scanning the mad bladders here on RadioNot.com as we take a walk through the Golden Grooveyard, kicking off a silver dollar twin spin with the Drift Glass.
When this old world stops getting me
that's the Drifters. This is Drift Glass.
Oh, sorry. Here's Drift Glass with Nicole Sandler.
That still makes me laugh. I don't know why. I'm easily amused. Easily amused. But it's always wonderful to hear the dulcet tones of Drift Glass coming through my radio. Hello, Drift Glass.
Well, hello. Can you hear me okay?
Hear you just fine. Good, Drift Glass, good. Of course, blogs at driftglass.blogspot.com and co-hosts the Professional Left podcast with his amazing wife, Blue Gal Fran. You can find them at proleftpod.com. So, Drift Glass, it's been a while, and certainly no shortage of excitement in the time since we last spoke. I told the listeners I would ask you this. What's been keeping you awake at night these days?
Oh, everything.
Yeah.
The elasticity of time, the way that time seems to be passing oh so quickly, it seems like we haven't talked for about 10 years.
Right.
It probably is only half of that. Ha, ha, ha. Right now, everything keeps me up at night because, I'm sort of reached my threshold of being afraid that I'm going to be, you know, burned up in a ball of fire.
Yeah.
But what interests me is, my wife and I have a Burn the Lifeboat campaign.
A what?
Which is, it is watching the same people who let George W. Bush off the hook. The same people who let the Tea Party get away with pretending that they were a brand new movement as opposed to a rebranding scam. Mm. All of the same people now rallying around an escape hatch for the Beltway conservatives. And the escape hatch is, this all is 18 months old. This all happened 2 years ago. Before 2 years ago, the Republican Party was fine. Everything was fine. And that Donald Trump is this black swan event, this sui generis, completely unique event. It has nothing to do with the history of conservatism. It has nothing to do with the past that we all share. It has nothing to do with our complicity, you know, for decades and decades. And that's Barry Weiss at the New York Times. That's Brett Stevens of the New York Times. That's David Brooks of the New York Times. That's George Will. That's Bill Kristol. That's Joe Scarborough. All the usual suspects are all telling exactly the same lie, which is this has nothing to do with us. Donald Trump is not a conservative. He's not a Republican. This is this freak event, and everything was fine before he showed up.
That's an interesting way to look at it. They do sing that song, don't they?
All of them do. All of them sing exactly the same song. That's what makes me so aware of it. You know, the idea that right after Barack Obama was elected, all these same people were like, hey, look at all these new independents. Where'd all these independents come from? Wow, there's this new independent movement abroad in the land. They all seem really conservative, too. Isn't that great, this grassroots movement that has nothing to do with the Republican Party, full of all these independents who want to do independent things like cut Social Security and cut Medicare and, you know, oh, all these Republican things.
Mm-hmm.
And they all got away with it. They all got it because the media got behind this notion that they knew was a lie, that what happened just months before, we're just not going to talk about. We're going to pretend it didn't happen. And you and I have been around long enough to watch them do this every couple of months, every 18 months or so. The Bush administration, the people in the media pretended the Clinton administration had never happened.
Right.
The Obama administration at the very beginning, the same people pretended the Bush administration never happened. And now the Trump administration, all the same people are pretending that the Obama administration never happened. I've heard these wistful people wishing that we don't, if only we had Connor Lamb is their new go-to guy. If only we had more people who were centrist,
right,
and appeal to the better angels of people's nature, and we weren't so tribal and partisan. Oh, why can't both sides get along? And I just reach through my Twitter machine and bitch slap them, pardon my language, and say, you had that for 8 months. It was called the Obama administration.
Right.
Barack Obama never confronted these people. He always tried to cooperate. He tried to compromise. He never said a bad word about any of you people.
He wanted everyone to like him. That was the thing about Obama. Just he wanted everyone to get along and everyone to like him. Didn't want to offend anybody.
And as a result, we have a giant racist orange fire demon in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't work. Treating these people nicely and hoping they're better angel, the better angels of the nature will emerge, does not work. What works is kicking their ass in elections and making them pay a brutal electoral price and naming them and shaming them, saying, no, the problem with the country isn't the Congress, isn't the voters, it's the Republican Party. The Republican Party is the problem. Once we have dismantled the Republican Party, many of our problems will go away. And we'll go back to arguing about the right wing of the Democratic Party versus the left wing of the Democratic Party. That's great. I will argue that all day long. But as long as this horrible disaster, this fascist party, is allowed to just run wild, and everyone in the media just looks away and pretends it isn't happening or pretends it's something else. I don't know if you noticed this, but last week or the week before, it got so bad that people other than me wrote about it. It was suddenly every conservative in America is writing about these awful campus shouty cracker liberals. You know, all these liberals on campus who are oppressing these poor Nazis who want to come to their campus and yell, you know, obscenities.
Right.
They're shouting poor Ann Coulter off campus. They're making people feel very uncomfortable because they need a boogeyman. They need something on the left that is equally terrifying to the reality on the right. So they all simultaneously invented this campus monster, these liberal social justice warriors on the left who are every bit as bad and unreasonable and tribal and irrational as the entire Republican Party. And isn't it a shame how both sides are to blame?
There's your both-siderism coming back.
Watching it happen in real time is a hell of a thing, because it's, you know, it literally is watching reruns. I've been through this movie 3 times already. I know how this ends.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I don't know? Maybe you can help me with this.
I can try.
Here's what I don't know. And I've asked and asked and asked, because I'm not a journalist.
Nor am I.
I don't even play one on TV. I'm a guy in a cornfield in the middle of America. That's right. That's my job. But I've hit a brick wall at the point where I can get the who and the what and the where and the when. I know who's doing this. I know when they did it. I know how they're doing it. I don't know why. I don't understand specifically why Mr. Bennett, who runs the editorial page of the New York Times, hired Barry Weiss at the New York Times. I do not understand why.
And
the
why
two
does
of them,
Bill Maher keep having her on his show?
These are really good questions, and I can deduce an answer. I can come up with a theory that explains it, but I don't have access to any of these people. I've been pounding my fist on this particular wall for 13 years now, and wanting to know, why is it that this particular lie is so important to the ongoing good feeling of the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN, and MSNBC, and NBC? Why do they keep protecting this particular lie to the death when everyone can see it's bullshit? Everyone. They never go to a venue where they're ever asked any questions about this. They never let their reporters or their journalists or the pundits be exposed to anyone who's going to ask them a harsh question. They never come out of their shell. They never go to an audience that's hostile. They always go to their colleagues who never ask them any questions. So my question is, seriously, who's behind this? Who is it at the New York Times that told David Brooks, you here have a job for life, sir. All you have to do is keep lying about the Republican Party every fucking day of your life. And you can have a job, and we're going to make you rich. we're going to get you a gig at PBS and NBC and MSNBC, and we're going to put you on NPR, and we're going to pimp your book deal. We're going to do all this shit for you. We're going to hire your friends. We're going to hire people who are just like you to surround you. But your job is to tell the same goddamn lie every week for the next 14 years. Who made that decision? And why is it so goddamn binding? Why is it so impregnable? Why can't anyone get Mr. Bennett on camera for 2 minutes and say, you know he's lying. I know he's lying. Everyone in this audience knows he's lying. Why do you keep pretending? And I think I know the answer to that, but it depresses the shit out of me.
Okay, what is the answer? Because I don't have it.
The answer is that the people they're writing for are doddering, old, rich, New York plutocrats.
Right.
Moral shut-ins who desperately want to believe that the country is something that it is most definitely not. So they've hired a lot of writers to tell them fairy tales about an imaginary America where the campus radicals are just as bad as the Republican Party. And that there's all these reasonable, thoughtful conservative people in the middle who are desperately trying to keep both sides from destroying this country. That's the fairy tale that 100 billionaires in New York want to hear. And by God, we're going to hire a million people. We're going to hire as many people as possible on as many networks as possible to tell those people that lie, because that's the lie they want to hear. And the second thing is,
yes,
Americans don't like spicy food. They like tapioca.
Uh-huh.
They like macaroni and cheese.
Yeah.
And there's a moral imperative. If you ever actually have to face the fact, acknowledge the fact that one of our two major political parties is a traitorous party, is a fascist party, an openly racist party, that would impose a moral burden on you to do something about it. So there are about a third of the people in this country who desperately don't want to be confronted with that reality and will do anything to avoid it. And that's why the go-to answer for everyone who is not, you know, someone like me, a crazy liberal like me or you, is both sides do it. Well, what are you going to do? Politicians are corrupt. Everyone's corrupt. Both sides do it. Everyone's bad. Everyone's awful. Washington's to blame. That's what they want to believe, because the alternative is, oh, crap, I have to start hating my neighbor now. My boss is a fascist, and I have to oppose him. I have to actually go out and vote. I actually have to do something to save my country. And that is something that drives advertisers away. It turns people off from buying your dick pills and your reverse mortgages on cable news.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not a story that those people want to hear. Those people want to hear that somewhere far away, there's a bunch of people who are all equally bad. And over here, there's a whole bunch of people who are reasonable and in the middle, and who are just trying to get both sides to agree with each other.
Although I think that I am hearing a little more of, you know, I do watch more MSNBC than I should. and I alternate with CNN, and then I have to go back to MSNBC because they have what's his name, Jack Kingston on, or one of those people. Yeah, that and when they have five people talking over one another at the same time, I just can't. But I am hearing people like, you know, I know one of your favorites, Chuck Todd, being sort of incredulous about the way things are going in this White House. I mean, he wants to make excuses for them. I feel it. But there are times when he just throws up his hands and says, I can't believe this is happening. So I think they're seeing it, but yet they're afraid to make the statement to come out and say that side is completely batshit crazy.
That's the problem. And you're right. I hear the same thing. I see E.J. Dionne writes a column just saying that civility is being destroyed by the Republican Party, and it's them and it's those guys. And you can't keep doing this. You can't destroy the civilization that we sort of have here. Let one party do it and get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And great. And I wrote to E.J. Dionne. I wrote a post about him. I tweeted him. I emailed him. I asked friends to email him. I said, that's great, E.J., you and I agree on this. You and I, you're kind of a humble kind of guy, but you sit right across from David fucking Brooks once a week. I don't get to do that. So why don't you ask your colleague David Brooks why he keeps letting Republicans off the hook? Why don't you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm never going to hear back from him, because that's never going to happen.
Right.
Because there's no Chuck Todd can throw up his hands and look incredulous and wonder why. But Chuck Todd does not want the answer to that question. Because the answer to that question is because 25 years ago, the Republican Party turned its soul over to Newt Gingrich and Rush Limbaugh. And 20 years before that, it turned it over to Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
And this party has been sliding down this very dirty road straight into the arms of Donald Trump for 50 goddamn years. And you goddamn well know it. And for 48 of those years, you've let them off the hook and looked the other way. And now you're standing here wondering why all this happened. What happened? Oh, my God. Well, Chuck, you happened. You're the problem. Meet the Press. Let Newt Gingrich go on the air unchallenged for years.
Right.
Newt Gingrich will go out there and say some awful racist shit and some divisive shit and lie his ass off and pimp his horrible books. And you'd have him on the air and you would never ask him a word about it. You simply up his profile and rehabilitate his career and send him right back out to do horrible, horrible things. You, Chuck, are the problem. You are the Quisling.
But as bad as Chuck Todd is and Meet the Press and all of these shows are, yep. You can't ignore Fox fake news, right? So there's Fox and now even Fox on steroids, Sinclair Broadcasting, which is going to put Fox to shame. And this is a whole other universe.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Yeah. At the Drift Glass household,
yes.
when we're not cheering on our local high school because they're at the state finals right now.
Yeah, very good.
There's a lot of positive things going on locally. We had a bunch of gun legislation passing. The Illinois Senate passed a bunch of reasonable gun control measures, some of which the governor hedge fund vetoed. But in the evenings, when we're taking a break and trying to sort of recalibrate for the next day, because Blue Gal writes for Crooks and Liars,
so yes, she's
in
this,
she's in her hazmat suit, 8 hours a day, mm-hmm. 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. We watch MSNBC and then CNN and then flip over to Fox,
ooh,
and see what they're talking about.
Uh-oh.
And it is beamed in from an alternate universe.
Yes,
because it's Stormy Daniels, Stormy Daniels, Hillary Clinton.
Wait, Fox is talking about Stormy Daniels?
No, it's CNN and MSNBC will be talking about Stormy Daniels or talking about Robert Mueller or talking about Rex Tillerson.
Right.
And you flip over to Fox News and it's Hillary Clinton. It's Uranium One. It's they're playing the oldies, man. They're playing the oldies. And I have people in my life who are conservatives and they have no idea what's going on in the world at all. Other than the fact that every other news source is lying all the time and liberals lie and it's a big conspiracy of liars and you're all liar pants, except, of course, when it blows up in their face. And you know what happens when it blows up in their face? You know what they tell me?
What?
What do you think? I have conservative friends who have been passing me bullshit conspiracy theories for 15 years through email.
Mm-hmm.
They're all the same. They're all nuts. They're all completely nuts. Take 90 seconds to debunk all of them. After every one of them blows up in their face, what do they say? Well, both sides do it.
Ah, of course.
Liberals are just as bad. Democrats mm-hmm. are just as bad. And let's see, where do you think they learned that excuse? Did you learn it on the street? No, I learned it from you, Dad. No, they learned it from Chuck Todd.
Right.
They learned it from David Brooks. They learned that that's the go-to alibi that gets them off the hook whenever they commit some horrible atrocity or whenever they get caught lying. All they have to do is say both sides do it and both sides are equally bad and some liberal somewhere did something equally wrong and away they go. And that is the permission that the mainstream media has given to Fox News to lie with impunity. And now there's nobody that'll stop them. Even, now that Roger Ailes is dead, there's no hand on the tiller. There's nobody to rein them in. I mean, he was horrible and a creep and a sexual predator and all the horrible things. But he did establish some sort of, perimeter around which, the horror was contained. Now it's just making crap up. Now it's just Sean Hannity just rambling incoherent bullshit on and on and on and on without end. And there's no one to stop them. And the people who watch this stuff, they gobble it up and ask for seconds.
Right.
And that, so I'm not unaware of that. I'm just, it's like watching a storm or a tidal wave. There's nothing I can do about them. Those people are lost as far as I'm concerned. They're unsalvageable, they can no longer be reached by reason at all. The only thing that's going to get them out of the picture is the slow, inexorable demographic bulge that will pass into the unquiet gray. they'll die off. And all those young people who were out marching on Wednesday will come of age and vote. But the people on the right are never going to change, ever. They can't, because once you start tugging on that thread, you have to admit that you were wrong about everything. And then you have to admit liberals are right. And then you have no future except going into your basement or filling your pockets full of stones and walking into the ocean. Because how can you live with yourself knowing that you are that big a fucking chump for your entire adult life?
That's the you know, the $64,000 question there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they believe it. I mean, I made this up years ago.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
So, you know, and now we have a president who makes shit up and then brags about it, making shit up to an ally, to Justin Trudeau. He makes up the stuff about the trade deficit, admits that he made it up, and then doubles down on it, and then has Sarah Huckabee Sanders lie for him and say, well, of course we have a trade deficit with Canada. It's gaslighting to the nth degree, where they tell us the sky is green.
Yeah. Well, it's gaslighting, but it doesn't work. I mean, it makes us angry and ashamed and horrified, but it doesn't make me think I'm crazy. It makes me think they're crazy and that they're dangerous and they need to be contained and ultimately eliminated, electorally eliminated. It only firms up my resolve that there are no good people in the Republican Party. There are no good conservatives, that the media is absolutely complicit in every bit of this. And that we on the left have to stick our crowbar where it will go in. There's no place on the right where we can make any progress. There just isn't. I've written them all off. The only place where there is any hope of getting any traction is taking away their alibi system. And their alibi system is Meet the Press. Their alibi system is the both sides centrist middle. And I've said this before a million times. Take down the center and the right will collapse. Because they can't survive without it. You need this enabling mechanism that normalizes and modifies and levels everything into tribal warfare. Both sides are to blame. It's the extremes on both sides. Once you take that away from the national conversation, then you get to have an actual real conversation about, and this is where some people, again, are breaking through. There's Charlie Pierce today was wonderful. And I wrote a post. I wrote a post yesterday that said, entitled, "I am David Roberts."
I saw that
because it's exactly what I've been writing for 13 years, and I say that with great admiration. But I don't have a byline, so you know, I my stuff gets read by 600 people. This got repeated by 1.2 million people. So, and that's just the real world. But it really is time to start taking the game to the people who are the enablers. Using whatever means are available, making them uncomfortable, making them sweat. And if that means making E.J. Dionne sweat or Mark Shields sweat, demanding that the so-called liberals on television and radio actually turn to their colleagues and start demanding answers. I saw this happen last week, I think it was. With Michelle Goldberg.
Oh, yes.
Basically punched Tom Brokaw in the throat.
Yeah, that I saw that, and that was excellent.
Wasn't that awesome?
Yes.
And Chuck Todd looked like someone had kicked his puppy.
Well, you know, I heard Tom Brokaw, why they keep trotting him out there as some great elder statesman, I don't know. I heard him talk about how, what's his name? Mike Pompeo, as he called him, how Mike Pompeo would actually be not a bad Secretary of State. And I had no words.
And my words were coming out of Michelle Goldberg's mouth. And I was delighted. But it's those moments there where she just basically wheeled on him and said, I don't understand. I don't understand how people can lie like this. I don't understand how you can sit here and say this bullshit and just have him sort of look like the doddering old idiot that he is. And just, oh, I think you're being unfair. Well, no, I'm not being unfair. I mean, absolutely fair. And watch Chuck Todd just shit himself on the air, because you're not clearly what she was saying. First of all, what she was saying was 100% true, accurate and true. And what that demonstrates as a lab experiment is that there are true things, clear, obvious, natural, true, observable realities that you are not allowed to say on TV and not allowed to say in print and not allowed to say on the radio. And the question is always, well, why? Who are you offending if you point out the fact that Rex Tillerson was a fucking disaster? Who mm-hmm. are you offending? Who is bothered by telling the truth in a medium? These aren't dentists. These aren't longshoremen. These are supposed to be reporters. Their whole friggin' job is supposed to be telling citizens truths about powerful people that we need to know about. And yet it's not. It's completely inverted. The job Chuck Todd does is to hide truth from people on purpose, on behalf of his employers at Comcast. Right. That's his job. And you look around and you see, oh, this is what's wrong. This is what's broken, is that you're not allowed to say true things in a profession that is constitutionally chartered to be a free press to protect citizens from power. That's what's broken. And that's not being able to tell the truth about Fox News has allowed Fox News to run completely out of control. Not being able to tell the truth about the National Review or about Breitbart or about Sinclair has let them run out of control. Those things would exist, just like any, you know, the nature is full of opportunistic viruses and terrible germs and bacteria. But the antibodies of our system are supposed to be the free press.
Mm-hmm.
And the free press has been kneecapped by corporate interests and by the right to the point where they won't do their job. They would rather die than do their job.
And now by a president who's telling us that the few remaining real journalists out there, the ones doing the work, asking the tough questions, that they're lying to you. All the while he's lying to you. It's the I'm rubber, you're glue thing. It's you know, don't believe, you know, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?
And he's only talking to his base.
Yes. You know, and they believe him.
Sure they do. And they will go on believing him. And I, you know, I've had this exchange with, I have had exchanges in my life with people. Here are the facts. And I've been told that Barry Obama was a Russian stooge. And the Russians intervened on behalf of Hillary. The FBI is full of liberals who are conspiring, and they all believe it. They all believe it.
And if you had asked them the same questions, you know, say 2.5 years ago, you know, the FBI was filled with Republicans. They were the good guys, right? And
that's what they lie about most often. They lie about the things they said yesterday.
Right.
And this is the absolute truth across the board. And starting with David Brooks, my wife and I have what we call the Beltway Iron Rule of David Brooks, which is it's mandatory to quote what David Brooks said today. It's forbidden to quote what David Brooks said yesterday. Because what he said yesterday turns out to be wrong. And when you start actually reading what these people have said or written or done, whether it's your local crackpot wingnut friend or the editorial page of the New York Times or anything in between, you will notice they're wrong about everything all the time. And if you just pluck a column from, you know, I plucked a column from what, 2005 or 6 that I wrote about way back when. And it wasn't Trumpism that David Brooks was worried about back then as the unique thing that had nothing to do with the Republican Party per se. It was just this one person who was the problem. But back then it was Tom DeLay.
Oh.
And it was DeLayism. The problem is the Republican, it's DeLayism. And once the party purges itself of DeLayism, we'll be fine. Well, no. It's not DeLayism. It's the fucking Republican Party. The whole party is the problem. And that's a truth he can't admit. But no one's ever going to come along and sit across from him at a desk and say, here's a column you wrote in 2014 saying that the Republican Party had finally purged itself of its weirdo elements and was doing fine. Here's a column you wrote in 2008 saying the same thing. Here's a column you wrote in 2004 saying the same thing. Here's a column you wrote in the Weekly Standard saying the same thing. You're lying. You're clearly lying. And my question is, why doesn't his editor do this?
That's a good question.
Why doesn't his editor at the New York Times say, David, I cannot reconcile the shit you wrote today with the shit you wrote 2 weeks ago that we paid you a lot of money to write. Why don't you come to my office and explain to me how this could be true when it was opposite land just a month ago? But they don't want that story out there. They want David Brooks and the rest of them telling these fairy tales about how it's both sides. It's always both sides. Everyone on both sides is equally to blame. And the one thing they can't, this is why another of our sayings on the left is that memory is the liberal superpower. It's the one thing we have that they don't have. you and I can remember the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm.
We can remember the Bush administration. We can remember the first Bush administration, even the details of it. They don't remember any of this shit because it's terrifying to them. Because if they ever had to actually match the things they're saying today with the things they said 2 years ago, they would collapse. There would be no more argument. They would have to sit down and shut up and stop voting because they obviously are incompetent citizens. If anyone forced the media to own up to the things they were saying when Barack Obama was president, then they would have to sit down and shut up as well. So the entire machinery of the media is devoted to not talking about the past. And as long as you can pretend the past never happened, you can say anything. You can lie about anything. Then right. Now we're into Orwell territory because we've always been at war with East Asia, right?
Right.
It's never been any different. And that's what scares me. You ask me what scares me. That's the thing that scares me is that a third of this country are now Orwellian cartoon characters who can be manipulated into believing anything that Donald Trump said.
Well, anything. I mean, look, they're the same people who were screaming when Obama said that he would meet with some of these authoritarian leaders unconditionally are loving that Trump now wants to do it. And the thought of Trump meeting with Kim Jong-un scares the shit out of me.
Same here. Same here. Except that never happened. That never happened. In their brain, that never happened. And if it did happen, well, both sides were probably to blame for it. So there's no way in. This is the problem with liberals like me. Liberals generally, our predicate is people can ultimately be made to see reason, and that isn't true anymore.
Some people,
a third of this country will never see reason because they can't, because the moral and financial and psychological consequences of being confronted with the truth of their lives is too destructive for them to face. They cannot do it. So they live like addicts. They get drunk, they lie about it, and they get drunk the next day. Mm-hmm. This is a dysfunctional family where daddy is Donald Trump and daddy gets drunk and abusive every night. And mommy is Chuck Todd, who says to the kids, "Let's make pancakes." You know, it's not... And no one who brings up the problem with the family is allowed to talk about it. No one's allowed to say out loud, no, the problem isn't some amorphous philosophical difference. The problem is that guy right there is out of his freaking mind. Once he goes away, our problems go away. But that's what the enablers are in charge of making sure never gets said. Because if once you start saying it, you start holding people accountable who've made a very good living lying. Joe Scarborough would be unemployed tomorrow.
Right.
Mika would have to find another person to buy her shoes at Barney's. they have a really deep and financial and psychological reason to not talk about what they were saying 2 years ago. And they have they control the cameras. They control the broadcasting medium. Mm-hmm. They control the printing press. They control the advertisers so they can make up whatever shit they want. And you and I can parse it and compare it and get infuriated by it, but until the center is taken out, until the position that both sides do it is so stank that nobody would dare say it because it's the equivalent of saying Nazi schmatzi, then we're screwed. But there are more and more people who are getting this. I mean, I do look at social media, people who are now saying, no, it's Republicans. It's not Congress. It's not people. It's not votes. It's not Paul Ryan.
Well, it is Paul Ryan.
But... Yeah, it is. Anyway, that's my take on what scares the hell out of me this week. How are you doing?
I'm feeling my way through. You know, I live in Coral Springs, Florida, which is the next town over from Parkland. So we were impacted very strongly by the shooting. So it's tough down here. I know it's tough everywhere, but seeing, I'm trying to come up with some encouraging, stuff to glom onto a little bit, and seeing the way the kids are reacting, seeing them march on Wednesday was
3,000 schools,
which is incredible. And, a week from, is it Saturday or Sunday? The 24th, Saturday.
Yep.
This march on Washington, I think, is going to be huge. And this is the future. So finally, I have some hope for the future. I think the kids are seeing through the bullshit and they're saying we're not going to take it.
Well, my stepson is, we're going to march in Springfield, where I'm at. There'll be a march in Chicago. There'll be a march everywhere. My stepson is at Augustana. And he and his crew are renting. He's a freshman. And he and his crew are renting a bus and taking it to Washington to march in Washington.
Wow.
And, because it's goosebumps. That important to all of them.
Yep.
And I am extremely encouraged that at that age, the level of activism, not manipulated, not crisis actors, really sincere, thoughtful activism is alive and well. And this has been said by a million people, so there's nothing new with me, but do not screw with these young men and women when it comes to social media.
No.
They will cut your legs out from you, man. They will kill you. I mean, I can't even follow my stepdaughter's thumbs across the phone as they're, as they're texting and Instagram and so on and so forth. May I tell you a delightful story?
Please.
Last weekend, our big splurge this year, our big splurge every year is my wife goes to a knitting convention. She's a knitter.
Okay.
And so she went to Chicago, and we went to Chicago for a day. So a day and a night. And so me and the girls, we had the SAT test this weekend. So we had to stay here. So I drove the girls up to Chicago, and we went to the American Writers Museum in Chicago, which is a brand new museum, which you should really go to next time you're in Chicago. It's wonderful. I thought it would be writing schmiting. I do that for a living. Why would I go there? It was amazing. It was wonderful. It was exciting. It was lively. It felt vibrant. It had displays and it had histories and it had voices and it had games. One of my favorite displays was the Bank of Manual Typewriters.
Wow.
Showing the evolution of typewriting from the portable old bangers to the semi-portable to the IBM Selectric to the laptops. And showing my stepdaughters, who are wizards at social media, how to roll a piece of paper into a typewriter and which way you do it. How do you advance a page? And what do I do for a capital letter? And why isn't the key going down? Well, the key won't go down until you hit it. Was my old man delight, explaining that this is how all of this around you was created. There was no, you don't reboot this. There's no batteries. People would hustle machines like this into foxholes, into war zones.
Right.
And this is how word got out to people. And I explained why we have QWERTY keyboards as opposed to any other kind of keyboards, because typists were so fast that they had to artificially slow them down by making the keyboard more complicated and more difficult to use than it needed to be.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was because typists were so fast that the hammers would jam.
Wow.
So they made a keyboard that would slow them down, and now that's the standard keyboard, even though those machines don't exist anymore and nobody has hammers anymore. You can type as fast as you want. So it was delightful. But teaching these extremely bright young women who are geniuses at social media how a manual typewriter worked was kind of delightful, I gotta say.
It's weird when we're the old people, isn't it?
I know. It's kind of fun. I've been looking forward to this all my life. Well, I can sit back. Back in my day, we had a thing called an IBM Selectric.
I was up in Tampa not too long ago and visited my old radio station at the University of South Florida, and they have in the newsroom an old manual typewriter there, sort of as a museum piece. And I looked at it longingly because those were the good old days.
They were, and I know writers who still use them. I know that Harlan Ellison keeps a stockpile of them in his
really.
Yeah, because he uses manual typewriters. And he's got like 10 of them in his back room because nobody repairs typewriters anymore. Wow. But I remember my mom blazing away on those things. I just, she could type like I don't know what. And just the physicality of hitting a key and driving a hammer into a piece of paper reminds me of sort of the muscularity of writing. The act of writing is an act of I forget who said it, to take up a pen is to be at war. And that's sort of what we do. I mean, we're at war, and because we sit behind keyboards and microphones and we tell the world who we are, what we think, and what we think the world should be. And that is as transgressive an act as you can imagine.
And the cool thing... Tell the truth.
We tell the truth. And the cool thing about the museum is that, like, up on the board, they would have Tupac and Prince next to John Cheever and Winston Churchill.
Wow.
Because they're all writers. And there's a strong element. It's a lot of Chicago writers too, but a strong element of rebels, of revolutionaries, of women, of civil rights, all of whom were word driven, all of whom, you know, moved people through their words. And I was just delighted by it. And if you ever get a chance to go up there, it's at 100 and something North Michigan. Wonderful time.
All right.
Tell them Drift Glass sent you.
Tell them Drift Glass sent you. And with that, we're out of time. The time just flies when I talk with you, Drift Glass. Thank you so much for joining us today. Always appreciate your diatribes on David Brooks and the rest of the crazies out there. We need to heed what you say. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Drift Glass. Find him at driftglass.blogspot.com and, of course, at the proleftpod.com for the Professional Left podcast. And with that, we're done for the week. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. I'll see you back here on Tuesday with Gotta Laugh.